always tear up when the Grinch's heart grows 3 sizes.
Tears seem appropriate. Enlargement of the heart muscle or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is a serious disease which could lead to congestive heart failure.
La 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 la.
I always love when they tell you to drink 8 to 10 glasses a day. Who could drink 8 to 10 glasses of water? Hey, man, what are you doing? Want to go to a movie? A movie? I wish. I'm booked. What are you doing? I'm drinking water like you should be, pal of mine.
It's ghost sickness.
Ghost sickness?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Wait, you're that girl that got hooked on pills and then dropped out. You're little Annie Adderall.
And you are a stupid jock who lost his scholarship by dislocating both shoulders in a keg stand.
Keg flip. They're very hard to pull off.
Good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Hi, I'm Rob Snow. It's 10 minutes after 3 o'clock on 580 CFRA, and we are welcoming back to the Wednesday House Call, taking your health-related phone calls at 521-TALK. Dr. Barry Dworkin, good to see you.
To see you, too.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
Missed you over the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure the listeners have as well. So let me say the phone numbers again. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, or 1-800-580-CFRA, 1-800-580-2372. And this is your last shot at Dr. Dworkin for the year, because it's our special New Year's programming this weekend, so there's no Sunday house call. So certainly encourage you to call early, because as per usual, a lot of people end up waiting on the line as we make our way through the hour. You had a good holiday?
It was excellent.
Nice to get away? Good weather in Florida? Or
28 degrees every day, sunshine, degrees. No rain.
And not 28 terrific. Degrees Fahrenheit, but actually...
No. No, that's not why I went down there. But very, very nice on the Gulf Coast. So
okay.
West West Coast of Florida.
And now back to reality.
Back to reality. Well, that's to be expected. That's okay.
Yeah. Anything going around? You seeing anything in the practice? Or
you know, it's interesting because people tend to ask, you know, you must be seeing lots of colds. You know what? That's not what we see. Yeah. We see the same stuff all the time. Hmm. Diabetes, heart disease, yeah. High blood pressure, various cancers, obesity issues, well child care, prenatal care. I mean, colds are a small, small percentage of things. And primarily, it may be different in drop-in center practices, but most patients, after they get to know you for a long time, and they've come in a few times and they've been diagnosed with colds, people learn. Right, they learn that, you know, there's no reason for me to go in this time because I know what the symptoms are. They're the same as what I had before. So there's no need for me to come back in to be told the same thing again. So, and the other issue is that it's also within a practice, I like to teach. And so when someone does come in, and a lot of times you have newcomers to the country and they're not familiar with the various diseases or colds, or they keep getting one cold after another, which is very common. When you take the time to explain why it happens and the symptoms and the differences between a viral and bacterial infection, that goes a long way to help also reduce the demand for services, but also provide people with information that make them more confident in being able to determine for themselves as well, is this something that really needs a physician or other health professional to evaluate?
Yeah. I bring this up not to be morbid in any way,
right.
but to do exactly what you just explained during your practice. Because I looked this up today from the Statistics Canada website.
Mm-hmm.
The 10 leading causes of death in Canada account for 76% of all the deaths in Canada. Mm-hmm. In other words, 3 out of 4 people who pass away in Canada in any given year will pass away from one of these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Accounts for 29.6% of all deaths in any given year in Canada. Number two, diseases of the heart, 21%. So a little more than one in five. And that can include a whole bunch of things, I would imagine. And then number three is cerebrovascular disease or stroke.
Strokes, exactly.
Right? So...
And so it combined, and really cardiovascular disease and stroke are one and the same because they're very similar in terms of what causes them. So add those together. And
so you would put heart disease
and stroke as
one,
yeah.
Which would bring that up to about 27% or so. So between cancer and heart disease, you're more than 60%, really.
And a lot
of all the deaths in Canada.
And a lot of it is preventable, too.
Lifestyle type
issues, right? Mainly lifestyle issues that contribute to most, even the cancers that contribute to these particular death rates that you're
mentioning. Number four was chronic lower respiratory disease. Mm-hmm. What would that be?
Usually chronic obstructive lung disease and smoking related.
So smoking-related diseases.
Yeah, usually that would lead you to have those chronic lung diseases.
11,000 roughly per year.
Mm-hmm.
Accidents or unintentional mm-hmm. injuries, fatal accidents. Diabetes. 7,500 deaths a year from diabetes. I would suspect a lot of that preventable as well, right?
Yeah, and I would lump that in with heart disease. Because
you would lump that in with heart disease as well.
Because diabetes is heart disease. So add that to the heart disease numbers as well.
Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's usually...
One of the top 10 leading causes of death in Canada, yep. Alzheimer's disease. How do you die from Alzheimer's disease?
Well, usually it's a deterioration of overall function. So right. you end up not only losing a lot of cognitive processes, but a lot of times they end up in hospital developing pneumonias. They fall, break hips. There's a lot of other incidental diseases or... Right. accidents that happen as a result of that.
The flu and pneumonia,
mm-hmm.
5,400 a year. And you think about all that time we dedicated to H1N1 when we had, every year we have 5,400 roughly people pass away from the regular
flu.
Seasonal flu and pneumonia. And then number nine, nephritis.
Which is
nephrotic syndrome and nephrosis,
kidney disease. And again, a lot of kidney disease is related to diabetes and coronary cardiovascular disease.
And number 10 is suicide, 3,700, mm-hmm. which in some instances would be mental illness, I would suspect.
Yeah, depression.
And then, so if you add all that up, you get 76% of all the deaths in Canada happen that way, roughly 180,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then all other causes of death. 23%, 55,000 a year. I found that interesting.
It is, and it is.
Because again, you see that over and over and over again. You deal with that on a daily basis, right?
And unfortunately now you're seeing diabetes diagnosed at earlier ages. And so what you now face are people in their sometimes 20s, which does happen, and 30s. They are developing type 2 diabetes. And that extra lead time, when you normally would see the disease occur later on, a decade or even 15 years later, means that you have 10 to 15 years more time for more damage to occur. And so they end up with earlier disease, earlier heart disease, earlier kidney disease, strokes. It simply accelerates that whole process in terms of the age at which you start seeing these, what we call comorbid or morbid conditions.
And that
it's terrible.
Yep. That was data that was released by Statistics Canada on the 1st of November of this year, mm-hmm. but it is 2008 data.
Yeah. And so you're likely going to see, they add this up all the time. But but again, the main ones, as you mentioned, which mm-hmm. really have not changed for many, many years, is heart disease, cancer, stroke. Those are the biggies, and lung
diabetes.
Diseases. And again, we talk about the amounts that we are spending on our healthcare system and the demands being placed on it. When you think about the consequences.
I have some data on that, actually.
When you think about the consequences of an illness, let's take heart disease, for example, Rob. You get heart disease, usually implies coronary artery disease. Person likely will have also diabetes. So you have the heart to look after. There's the kidney that eventually starts to fail. There are potentially heart attack or strokes or mini strokes. You can get vascular dementias. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And each time you develop something else means more care. And again, it is preventable. This is what's frustrating for a lot of people, is that many of these diseases are preventable.
Diet, exercise. Almost that simple, right?
It is. Yeah. There's no magic. You don't have to write a book.
Diet,
and be a celebrity and say, here's a book I'm writing on how to stay healthy. It's not smoking. 30% of all the cancers that you mentioned are secondary to cigarette smoke. 30% of all the cancers. The other 30%, This is from Dr. Richard Béliveau's book that we had talked about earlier.
Do you remember the title of that
book? Yeah, there's Foods That Fight Cancer, with Foods That Fight Cancer, and Living Well, Eating Well. Those are his three books. Excellent, written for the public.
Highly recommended from Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Referenced, well-referenced, evidence-based information. And so, you know, 30% smoking, 30% from the food that we are eating that we particularly shouldn't be. Now, that's not not saying don't eat that food.
But processed food, high in sugar, high in
fat. It's when you're eating it all the time.
Right.
And a lot of people do that. I mean, witness, you know, the latest quarterly earnings from McDonald's.
Sure.
You know, the people go all the time.
Yeah. And now McDonald's going to give away free coffee.
Yeah. And so you have.
Because of the economic downturn.
Yeah. So you have all these issues.
Yeah.
30% of a lot of cancers are secondary to the foods that we are eating. So 60% right there of those cancers that you mentioned, you know, give or take several percentage points, preventable.
Right.
Completely preventable.
Yeah.
But
we have a phone call.
Sure.
We should get to it.
Sure.
Because Dave is having problems with a knee. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you guys.
And
thank
to you,
you.
Too.
Okay, I'm 41 years old, and I'm not going to get any of those things you guys were talking about.
Okay.
I eat well, I sleep well, and I exercise a lot. But I'm a little frustrated right now. I have a problem with my knee just below the kneecap. And I have, I'm very active. I play a lot of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I do plyometrics, yoga, you name it. Anyways, I'm doing yoga the other night and I go down into child's pose and I'm kneeling on my knee and I suddenly feel this excruciating pain below the kneecap. And, I cannot do anything with my knee that can repeat the pain other than kneeling.
Right.
But the pain is significant and, I cannot kneel, even putting mild weight on my knee.
So what you've done is you've contused or compressed what we call the tibial tubercle. This is the bump that's just below the kneecap. It's where the tendons, what we call the patellar tendon, attaches to. And this area is where when your muscle contracts, when your quadricep muscle contracts, it pulls on that tendon and will straighten your leg out at the level of your knee. And so when you're kneeling in that area, there's no muscle there. All there is bone and tendon and some ligaments. And that pressure that's generated on that small spot can be tremendous. It can be hundreds to almost 1,000 pounds per square inch just from being on that point, because instead of the entire knee taking the weight, it is now that small, maybe half to 1 square inch of bone that is now taking the entire load of your body weight. And so that's why you end up with that kind of pressure. So the bone has likely been compressed a tiny bit. The good news is that this will heal. The fact that it only hurts when you kneel and any other movement does not cause any pain means you have not damaged the knee joint at all. But it is that area of bone that when you press on it, it's going to hurt. It's not likely fractured, but it's been pressed and it didn't like it very much. And so you can certainly continue with all your activities as long as you're not kneeling, because you're unlikely to cause any further damage. But it will take sometimes, you know, you're looking at 8, 10, even 12 weeks for a bone to heal up properly.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I can live with that.
Yeah. But otherwise, best thing is knee pads. Don't go straight on your knees on the floor, because that's what knee pads were invented for.
Okay. So good luck, Dave. And we'll be back with more of your phone calls right after the 3:30 news. And also some more interesting kind of end of the year health statistics that I'll throw at Dr. Barry Dworkin and ask him for some commentary in his final visit for us for 2011.
My doctor tried to scare me out of smoking. My doc, you know, showed me a picture, a smoker's lung. Oh, it was gross and disgusting. Then he showed me a picture, it was a healthy guy's lung. Oh, it was gross and disgusting. But I put him on the inside. I have to look at him all the time, you know. I thought I'd be in better shape when I quit smoking, but nothing's really changed, you know. Except I can taste my food. That's one thing. All my food now has this incredible taste. Oh, man. Everything I eat, I go, hey, what kind of food is that you're giving me? Oh, there's a zingy, tangy food there, isn't it? What kind of a tangy, zingy kind of a... It's a boiled potato, huh? Remind me to get the recipe after for that. I'm no Superman.
I have to thank Chris for making those up all year.
They're fantastic.
Funny stuff, eh? All right. So we talked about the leading causes of death in Canada in any given year. And you know, I don't want to revisit that. But the life expectancy numbers were also released not that long ago from Statistics Canada. And for males, 80.9 years. Mm-hmm. Oh, pardon me. No, that's not right. Both sexes. Mm-hmm. When you take both sexes, the average is 80.9 years. And that's for males, it's 78.5 years. Mm-hmm. And for females, it's 83.1 years. So, I mean, 5 years. The women have 5 years on us.
It's all that risk-taking.
Why is that?
It's the risk-taking.
You think it's risk-taking? We're just riskier as a gender, do you think? Or
likely more, because this takes into account, you know, all causes of death, right? So usually more accidents, more injuries.
Okay.
You know, there's also again, it's not necessarily, you have to look at smoking rates amongst
right.
the different sexes.
Okay.
Heart disease. Diabetes, right. I mean, all these other things right. you have to see.
And these are just averages, right? Obviously, right. they're just averages. And let me see here. People in Ontario. No, I got to get these numbers right here. People in British Columbia, on average, live the longest.
Mm-hmm.
83.6 for women and 79.2 for men. In Ontario, it's 83.4 and 79.0.
Pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close. And in the territories, not too surprising, I don't think, it's 78.5
mm-hmm.
In the territories and 72.5. 72.5. Wow. You know, 5 years shorter life expectancy for men living in the Canadian North.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were aged 65 in 2008, these are 2008 figures,
right?
If you were 65 years old
mm-hmm.
at that time, and you were a man, on average, you would live another 18.3 years.
Not too bad.
Okay. And if you were a woman and you were 65 in 2008, on average, you would live another 21.5 years.
It's pretty amazing.
When
you think that, you know, 100 years ago, life expectancies were in the 40s, 45. And again, the reasons are better food production. Sanitation, infectious diseases have been essentially conquered, right? Vaccines have eliminated a lot of the diseases that caused a lot of harm. Pneumonias, there's vaccines for pneumonias for older age. And there are medications to control a lot of the other diseases that have now replaced those that were present 100 years ago, right? People died of tuberculosis 100 years ago. They died of polio. They died of, again, many of it was infectious disease at the time, dying in childbirth. You don't see that as much now, but you do see the heart disease and diabetes, and people are taking medications to stave off those diseases.
But think about somebody who retires, like say the usual mandatory retirement age would be 65, mm-hmm. that a man would have to plan to live at least, or on average, another 18 years after their retirement, and a woman 21 and a half years.
Well, my observation has been that there are patients in my practice, and again, I can only say from... You know, I'm sure other people have seen the same thing. Those people that take care of themselves, they're exercising, they're eating well, they're staying active, they're reading, they're keeping their brains active. They don't look 65, Rob, when they come in and they're 65 years old. They look much younger and they're much more active. They don't have as many diseases. In fact, some have nothing at all. So it's not a question of just medical intervention, but just how well people take care of themselves over their lifetime. You know, there'll be others that come in their 40s who have been smoking for 20 or 30 years, who haven't been eating very well, who don't exercise, who look older than their stated age. So it really does make a difference externally as well as internally with how we look after ourselves over our lifetimes.
Just very quickly, because we talk a lot about heart disease and stroke,
mm-hmm.
Which... We kind of fall into this umbrella category as cardiovascular disease, right? Just some numbers on cardiovascular disease, end of year numbers mm-hmm. from Statistics Canada, again, based on 2008 data, but released this year. 1.3 million Canadians reported having heart disease diagnosed by a health professional. 5% ages 12 plus years and 23% of Canadians age 75 and older. So 1.3 million people suffering from some type of cardiovascular mm-hmm. disease. 300,000 Canadians reported living with the effects of a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
The after effects of some of some kind of stroke. So I found that to be very interesting. And you mentioned the huge health costs associated with this.
The burden of care on that, and also the disruption of your own life, your ability to do what you want to do, the sports that you may want to do, the interactions with your family, the travel that you might want to do.
Yeah,
the work.
Listen
that you're
to these
doing.
Numbers: the total cost for healthcare costs, direct costs for treating mm-hmm. cardiovascular disease in a typical year in Canada, $7.6 billion.
Yeah,
and then
that's a year.
In
every
one
year.
Year, that's right. And another $14 billion for indirect costs, what they count as indirect costs, lost economic productivity due to disability of health.
Mm-hmm.
65 million prescriptions dispensed for the treatment of cardiovascular disease a year.
Mm-hmm. it's
More. That's more people than are in Canada.
Well, when you
twice as many people that are in Canada.
When you think about someone who has heart disease or cardiovascular disease, and say you came in, Rob, for mm-hmm. example, and you had some heart disease. You have some evidence of elevated cholesterol. Your risk of cardiovascular disease, your 10-year risk, which we do a calculation on the basis of cholesterol levels, blood pressure, age, smoking history, family history, and such. You know, some people come in and their heart disease risk, the risk of a heart attack or heart disease, is over 20% over the next 10 years. That's high risk. So right away, you have to start a statin medication because the evidence shows that if you do that, you reduce the risk. You have to start something to reduce the blood pressure if they've got elevated blood pressure. So there's two medications right there. Usually to control blood pressure, one medication is usually not enough. The average number of blood pressure medications required to control blood pressure adequately is 3.1. Per person. So there's
three medications per person.
So you're thinking at four medications, at least, let's just say 2 to 4 medications per person who has heart disease, probably even more because they usually are given a beta blocker as well if they have any evidence of angina. Then if they get diabetes, another 3 medications on for that. So now you're up to 7 medications a day. And so that's why you get all these millions of prescriptions.
Listen to this. 10% of all visits made to physicians are for the management of cardiovascular disease. 34 million physician visits a mm-hmm. year. Cardiovascular disease is the primary reason for hospitalization. 17% of all hospitalizations, 20% for women and 20% for men, 14% for women. So 1 of every 5 visits to hospitals for some form of cardiovascular disease. The proportion doubled when hospitalizations with CVD as a related condition were included. So where it wasn't the primary condition, but it was a related condition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And CVD, cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. accounted for the highest proportion of days in hospital compared to other health problems. 17% of all days, 19% for men and 15% for women.
It's you know, you look at this, you shake your head and you go,
wow.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it is overwhelming, isn't it?
And literally in one fell swoop, you could get rid of this. No, and that's I sound like a broken record, right?
I know, but
you know,
I think those numbers really kind of drive
it
home for me.
I do not enjoy prescribing medications to people. I frankly can't stand doing that because it's really a Band-Aid solution, because if the lifestyle doesn't change, it doesn't matter what I throw at somebody, they're still going to get worse. It'll just slow it down, but they're still going to get worse. They're going to develop more severe disease and becomes more complicated. Reverse the process entirely with what caused it
health
in the first
promotion.
Place.
Health promotion,
that's,
right?
But we live in a society, and I spoke to Mark about this a couple of days ago in the morning. You know, we live in a society that is obesogenic, right? Everything around you screams large portion sizes, lots of food, sugar-laden stuff.
I'm holding up my...
your Tim Hortons latte. Yeah,
vanilla latte.
Yeah. It's calories everywhere. There's a calorie glut. And really I'm not saying it's the only thing, but the society that we live in promotes this type of thing.
Yep.
It's a car society as well. People use their cars to go everywhere. It's in each individual factor adds up. Yoni Fridoff talks about this all the time. It doesn't just say it's the food. It's everything else that's involved within our society that contributes. It can be quite overwhelming.
Marianne, you're probably the last person who will talk to Dr. Dworkin this year.
Well, it's an honor.
On the
Thank
radio.
You.
Go ahead.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. You too.
I am a well person in my mid-50s, slim and active physically, travel by bike most places, and I feel really sick today. And what happened was last night where I was, I suddenly became very, 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 very cold, and nobody else was cold. I became very, very cold. So I thought, oh, well, you know, that's a cold or a flu, which I never get. But, you know, once in a while, I suppose that's OK. So I came home. I went to right to bed, and I was up through the night off and on. I was fine, like just feeling this very cold and a little bit headachy. This morning when I got up, I fainted twice. Once in the hall and once in the bathroom, and I have no recollection of getting Wow. from the hall to the bathroom. Absolutely no recognition of that. So right now, through the day, I've been moving slowly. I'm not eating. I'm trying to drink a lot of water, but even that's a bit hard. I have a mild headache. And the only thing I can compare it to in my life is one summer in Israel, I was working outdoors and got a bad case of sunstroke. So this is what this feels like. It feels like that did weakness, dizziness, mild headache. And I'm wondering if this could have something to do with sugar. I don't eat a lot of sweets, but over the holidays, very kind people bring me lots of stuff.
Okay, well, let's hear from the doctor because we're a little tight on time, Mary, and we'll see what we can do for you.
Yeah, it's unlikely that this is hypoglycemia per se. Usually hypoglycemia will make you feel headachy or sweaty, irritable, not usually fainting, though, from it. I mean, you can feel a bit weak and tired, but fainting is usually a reduction in blood pressure, not enough blood flow to the brain that suddenly gets cut off, and then a person collapses, and then they regain consciousness as blood pressure normalizes. But what's of concern is that this is something that you haven't experienced in a long time. You haven't been, and normally you're generally well. So ideally, there are a few things that I would want to evaluate in order to determine what's going on, because all these symptoms can be suggestive of a lot of different things. So I can't start listing off all the diagnoses, but you do need to
have...
It
came on all of a sudden, too.
Yeah, so I mean, you do have to look for infectious causes. That is possible. There's a blood test that will tell us what your white blood cell count is. Also checking thyroid function. We can certainly check blood sugar, iron levels, vitamin B12 levels.
Should she wait?
I would probably get this. I mean, offices are open this week. I would go this week to get this done. I wouldn't be too comfortable telling you. You fainted twice without any recollection. There's a danger of hitting your head somewhere and having that kind of damage. I'm not comfortable just telling you to stay at home and wait and see what happens, given that you already had two fainting spells. It's certainly better to at least get some blood tests and have an evaluation to look and see if there's any infectious process that's doing it. Sometimes even urinary tract infections can do that, even though you may not have symptoms of it. It can certainly cause that kind of thing. So it's very important to do a full evaluation of this, given the symptoms are sort of very common to a lot of diseases.
Okay,
Marianne.
Thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Great to see you.
We're back next week.
You're back next week?
Yeah.
I'm back next week, too.
Excellent.
So we'll talk then on Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Dr. Barry Dworkin and the Wednesday House Call. And that's it. That's all for 2011 for Dr. Dworkin. Don't forget, no Sunday House Call this week. It's our New Year's programming on CFRA. That'll be archived, though, CFRA.com.